W.S. Blandy, CEO of Assiniboine during the helicopter trials 1963-64, April 14th, 1997. Commander Blandy, perhaps we can start by you telling us when you first joined the RCN and your early training and experiences, and then we can jump forward to you being appointed commanding officer of Assiniboine in 1963, and we can get on to the helicopter trials.
Okay. Well, I joined the RCNVR in mid-43 since I was old enough. I was a student at Victoria College. And so I was able to get a commission direct entry commission, and I went to Chippewa, Winnipeg, reserve strength there for a couple of months since September of 43, and then went to King's College in Halifax from an NN division. It was funny, they had NNO and then it was Ajax division. I don't think they could stand the idea of a PP division. And anyway, from there, I went to motor torpedo or MLs because Tom Denny, who's a big wheel in standard furniture here, he was the 2IC for the MLs, and I knew Tom's the yacht club, and I didn't like the concept of big ships too much. I liked small boats, so I saw Tom, went down to see him, and told him I wanted to get into the MLs. And he said, "Fine, come along." So I did a couple of tours in MLs up in Newfoundland. In Halifax, and then the Canadian MTB squadron had some openings, and so three or four of us went over Christmas of 43, just before Christmas of 43, and so it was in the Channel, and we weren't at the big explosion in Ostend, but some of the boats of our squadron were, and then they came home, and I liked the Navy, and advertised for people to join the permanent force, so I applied and got accepted and did the usual things as a reserve joining the permanent force, and I got sent for a year to the Royal Navy with Jim Pratt and Murray Weymouth and Johnny Carling and one other chap, I've forgotten his name now. Stone, that's Ken Stone, Vancouver. And I went over to the cruiser Bermuda as a boats officer and the usual Joe jobs. And then sailed back to England when her ship to pay off and then came back to Canada. And had a few Joe jobs around Halifax. And then, let's see what happened. Anyway, I wanted to specialize, and got sent to Vernon to take the long task course, and I was lucky enough to win the Overton Medal of topping the course, the first Canadian to do so, and Tom Hebert did it after me, and came back to Canada, did the usual Joe jobs in the weapons school in Halifax, and then up in Ottawa, the weapons desk up there. And then I got sent out to Victoria to be skipper of New Waterford. And then I moved over to Beacon Hill after Paul Wilson got court-martialed. And did my tour with her. And then Alec Kilpatrick and I swapped jobs. He came out from the senior instructor of Maritime Warfare School. And I went back there and got promoted from there to commander. And became officer's training officer in Halifax. Then I was OIC of the weapons division. And then from there, I came out here to take command of Assiniboine.
And you took command of Assiniboine which month?
Oh, God. I was out here for several months before, you know, working, getting the crew organized and everything. She's the first of class. She was Harry Rusk, the XO, who lives over here in Ten Mile Point. Sent me a picture of my cabin, quote unquote. It was full of all the construction junk. He was storing her. No, VMD did the conversion, and I happen to know the manager of VMD very well, Jack Gilbert. He was an old sailing buddy of mine from the Royal Vic, and I think Jack was pretty good to me. He did a number of little things to make the ship go better. And anyway, we did the basic acceptance trials from the yard to the Navy and make sure that they carried out their contract. And of course, we were very popular. You know, we had Charlie Dillon was an admiral, came out to visit us and had to come to see in Assiniboine. And this was the freak show around here. And then I had an air department, of course, and I put Harry Butel, a Beatles dispatcher, who used to be a Victoria boy. He was a lieutenant, an aviator. He'd been out at Panic Bay here in the contingent there, and he joined me. And he brought the first helicopter on board and decided we'd just see if it really worked. So we did our no trials authority or anything like that. We just decided to do it, and we did it. And anyway, then when we finished our acceptance trials and paid the bills to the contractor, we took off to Halifax and VX-10, and Commodore, or Captain Edwards as he was then, CEO of the Naval Air Station, and Captain Doherty from Ottawa, they pretty well ran our lives. And I was very lucky that we had an excellent chief of staff in Halifax then, Jim Pratt. And he was ex-VR. Matter of fact, as I said, I'd gone out to the Far East with him. And anyway, he was a believer, from my estimation, of getting on with the job. And so I got everything, all the support I could possibly ever ask for from him. And, you know, the dockyard, we were told to lay on extra people if they had to. And, we'd come in and I did a couple of odd things in the ship which I shouldn't have done. I got my knuckles wrapped for it. But anyway, that was part of the price of progress, I felt. And, we got on and got it done. And, look at the navies of the world now. They're using the system.
Right. How long were the acceptance trials out here on the West Coast?
They were pretty standard routine. When you take a ship from the yard, you had to do steaming and things like that. One of the funniest trials, though, was the stabilizers. We were the first ones to have stabilizers fitted, and to try and keep a stable platform when we were flying. And so how are we going to test the stabilizers? So we couldn't find any rough weather off here in beautiful Victoria. So one of the technical guys said, well, look, I tell you what, we'll do a wire them in reverse. So they wired them in reverse, and we were going along. They wired them in reverse, and we were rolling like this. And the poor fishing boat we went by came out, and he pushed coffee over the side. I guess he figured it had too much caffeine in it or something when he saw the story of rolling around in calm water.
Were there, did anything come up during the acceptance trials that were substandard that caused the ship to go back to the yard?
Not that we found. I felt we had a good deal. We got a good product out of BMD, and no conversion job is 100%. You know, there were some little poopy things, but I had a very, very good engineer officer, Jerry Dawes, and Jerry's whole philosophy in life was, let's get on with it. I had a couple of engineer officers at other times who said, well, the book says we can't do that. But Jerry's idea was, Christ, this is what we got to do, we'll do it. And he was absolute super support.
Were you, you had mentioned earlier that you'd come out a few months before Assiniboine was ready to get everything ship-shape and get the crew together. Were you also working with the naval overseer?
Basically, no, because the technical side was run from between Ottawa and the overseer, and that had to do with the bucks and the contract and the wording and that. So we left that alone. Mr. Commander Hall, I think his name was the overseer and electrical officer, and he got us a good deal and a good product. I've got no regrets on what BMD did for us.
You mentioned
it goes back a long way from when I was going to university, and we used to work at the Yarrows, and we always felt we were the better yard in the VMD. We used to call it the Vicious Murder Department because they had a misfortune to have a number of accidents in their shipyard, and Yarrow didn't, so we always felt we were the creme de la creme.
You had mentioned that the Navy accepted Assiniboine and VMD had turned her over, that the Sea King landed aboard out here on the West Coast just off of Beacon Hill Park. Was that before the concrete and dummy helicopter was embarked aboard Assiniboine?
I can't recall the time sequences, because some of those things that were done had to do with the contract and the specifications of the conversion, and that was strictly between Hall and the technical side. And I had nothing to do with that. That was a technical thing, and it had to do with the contract, so I was hands-off there. Sometimes we just had to get the ship in a place or in a position to do something, but it was following their requirements that went on.
Right. So now Assiniboine is ready to steam for Halifax, and the concrete and dummy helicopter has been lifted aboard Assiniboine to carry out the traversing trials, primarily in and out of the hangar.
Yeah, the hangar with the bear trap, yeah.
With the bear trap. Did those trials, were they carried out during the entire passage, or were they completed before the ship arrived in
Halifax?
That's
one thing I'm afraid I can't recall the sequencing in relation to other things. But I do know that we had an awful lot of people who had to come out from Ottawa to check things out in Assiniboine, but they couldn't join until we got to San Diego, and they had to leave her when we got to got around to the West Coast. And unfortunately, we had a bit of a smuggling thing on it, which up to Halifax, it was phoned up in the middle of the night by the customs, and said they'd seized some stuff, and I was the consignee as the captain. Could I please come down? So down I went to the customs place, and there were a bunch of boxes of test equipment that we'd had to embark for some heat trials and things like that, living accommodation coming through the Panama and the tropics and that. And in amongst all this technical paraphernalia, there were a whole bunch of bottles of booze that the gentleman from Ottawa, who came down to do the trials, had bought and packed in with the official stuff to send back home. But I was very suspicious when I got this call from the customs people, so I phoned up a naval intelligence guy, and I said, look, I want an independent witness to come down with me to see what's going on here. I have no recollection, or can't understand what it is, but I want somebody from outside to come down and to see what's going on. So he came down, and the ship was exonerated. Any problems? But as a CO, I was a consignee.
Right. So what what other trials would have been conducted during Assiniboine's passage from Esquimalt to Halifax beyond purely the traversing trials with the concrete and dummy helicopter?
There was, one about the ventilation and hot weather and a few things like that, but it wasn't, there weren't onerous trials. I mean, as I say, we embarked these very few from Ottawa, and they came down with their little chips, and they wanted to do this, they wanted to do that, and we gave them all the support we could and let them do them. But I say something had to do with conversion, basic conversion, nothing to do with helicopter.
When Assiniboine sailed from Esquimalt, what time of the year would that have been, roughly?
Oh, the fall.
The fall.
Just after the yachting season, I remember, because it couldn't have been better. I was able to crew with Ned Ash in the final race of the series, and then I think that was on the Sunday, and on the Monday or Tuesday we sailed.
So the weather was good,
yeah,
all the way down the West Coast?
Pleasant, yeah.
And what about through the Caribbean and coming up the East Coast?
There was nothing significant that I can recall, but just a normal passage.
So you were quite happy with the seakeeping qualities of the ship?
Yeah. Well, once again, it was a bit of the blind leading the blind, because I had never served in a Cadillac before. You know, I'd gone from frigates to the Cadillac, and this was my first Cadillac, so I was quite comfortable in her, and she seemed to do the things I wanted her to do and expected her to do, so I was happy.
But you would have an opportunity to find out more about the seakeeping qualities of the ship during the trials on the East Coast.
Yeah, well, the biggest concern was the hangar was a fantastic amount of windage, and sometimes you get an offshore wind in Halifax. It was an absolute bee to get the ship in alongside. So I went up to see the chief of staff, and I said, look, the trials are very important, and I might call for tugs to help me get alongside as an offshore wind, a little more than maybe a prudent seaman would, or some of the more dashing skippers would. But I think it's prudent to do that so that we won't jeopardize the trials anyway. And he said, couldn't agree more. And so I had absolutely wonderful support from the dockyard, from the whole trials period, both from the technical side, you know, getting little jobs done overnight so we go out to the trial next day if something broke down or was modified. And also from the operations people. They made sure that we got good berthing spaces and everything. In other words, I had nothing but bloody good support all around for this thing.
How did you feel as the CO of Assiniboine to be taking over and to be tied down, if I can use that word, with the trials as opposed to being attached to a squadron and being operational?
Well, matter of fact, I think for me it was much more fun because I had no squad boss. I was the boss, and the chief of staff was giving me full support, and Commodore Edwards, or Captain Edwards, was giving me full support. So I pretty well wrote my own ticket.
Mm-hmm.
And got on with the job. They tried to put me through WUPS, and I said, "Look, I think I've WUPed my shipment well enough to do the trials, and I haven't had any accidents or anything. So, and this would be an extra time piece out of the program." I said, "Leave me alone. We'll get on with it."
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why, but anyway, they accepted that, and so I went through the whole thing. On my shoulders, you might say, in a sense. I'm not bragging in a sense, but just that I felt the trials were of paramount importance, and that was what should come first. And that's the way I tried to gear all the things we did and all the things Assiniboine did.
Just as an aside, as the trials progressed, and we're jumping ahead here a bit perhaps, was it difficult to maintain a high state of morale amongst the crew for such a long period of time?
No, it didn't seem to be. Well, don't forget, I had several crews. I had a West Coast crew who took the ship around, and then they swapped with Kill and Kootenay, Kilpatrick, and he brought the Kootenay back to Esquimalt with a lot of the crew I embarked with, and then I got my East Coast crew.
Right.
And so I had to do a new workups with the ship with a new team on them, but we did that on our own. And we had help from the staff people. When I say on our own, we set the program. We asked for resources,
mm-hmm.
and I got them.
Now,
I think a lot of that had to do with the good work of Jim Pratt and Edwards. They'd sown the word around, hey, you know, this helicopter destroyer is the end thing. We want to get on with it. It's a Canadian first. Let's go.
Mm-hmm.
And I just got full support to make that happen.
Right. Now, leaving the West Coast and steaming for Halifax, there would have been a number of people aboard ship that wouldn't normally be there. They were there for the trials. But I assume in Halifax, there were that many more people crawling all over the ship.
Yeah, we see. We were a very popular destination for everybody from Ottawa wanting to get down to Halifax for a little while. I lost. And when I was going down visiting the States, and I think I lost track of my admirals when I reached 100.
That many?
Well, you know, we were an oddity and a way of the future, and so they all wanted to come down and have a look at the bear trap and see what we were doing. And it was good fun.
What can you remember of their impressions of what was happening with the Assiniboine?
Well,
the Americans and or the Brits, for that matter.
Well, for the Americans, I don't know. I got a feeling that they were a little pissed off that they weren't doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, they weren't terribly innovative. They were tended to be, what I saw, but if Farragut did it this way, we'll do it this way. They're very much tradition-oriented. They weren't at that particular time. Their Navy didn't seem to want to branch out and try things.
Right.
So they were interested to see somebody else trying it. And when it would prove successful, they might join the bandwagon.
Oh, okay. All right. So now Assiniboine is on the East Coast in Halifax, and VX-10 is at Shearwater, and we move into the first phase of the trials, which took place, if I remember correctly, primarily in Bedford Basin.
Well, for quite a while there was a question of the technical stuff on the flight deck. So there was no need to go steaming all over the place, so I'd go up there in the morning and secure to a buoy.
Mm-hmm.
And we got a couple of pup tugs on there and to put the ship into wind and out of wind and stuff like that. They said there was no need to go steaming to do that. They just wanted airspace and clear sea around me to do these trials, which they did. And, you know, the things like making sure that they put the zapper on the wire first to get rid of the static electricity in the aircraft.
So right.
Apparently early on somebody didn't know about that and grabbed the bloody cord and damn near killed them because, you know, because they apparently build up an awful lot of static electricity in an aircraft. And so the first connection was something connected to the water.
Mm-hmm. So while the VX-10 is carrying out their trials and you're working with them, what sort of normal routine would the ship's crew be going through as additional?
Well, just the normal housekeeping things, and we had a bit of a safety group, fire people, you know, in case there's a crash on deck. They were always lined up to flying stations, the technical side, but we didn't have, the ops room wasn't closed up or anything like that, because it was all being handled aft, and it was a static trial, we weren't moving anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So just go up there and do the trials, come back, go up the next day, do the trials, come back.
How long did that go on for?
I can't remember offhand.
A couple of months, would that be a fairly accurate?
I would think so, yeah, around there.
And the next?
We had a lot of visits and liaison, of course, with Ferry Aviation,
mm-hmm.
and the people who put the thing in.
And people coming up from Doughty, from Ajax, the other prime contractor
We just, civilians on board the ship, you know, as long as they got there, they just had their security clearance, they just came on for the ride to do the trials.
So I assume it was pretty crowded, or could be pretty crowded.
Yeah, but don't forget, we're day running, basically. So, you know, come on at 8 o'clock in the morning and go home at 5 o'clock at night when we got back to the dockyard.
But that would change once Assiniboine
got the contract finished and then the technical stuff, then it was a question of trying it out under operational conditions at sea.
And the first, that next phase that you refer to was just steaming in local waters.
Yep.
Just off of...
Off Halifax, day running. And then we were looking for rough weather and we couldn't find it off Halifax, so I went up to St. John's, Newfoundland. And we waited about 10 days for some rough weather, so-called. Mind you, our necks were at a mile in the sense that if the plane had crashed or anything like that, we were on our own. There's no
mm-hmm.
no second ship, no standby ship or anything, but that's the way we did it, and we were lucky enough to get away with it.
Were there any early mishaps with any of the recovery of the aircraft and handlers?
I don't remember any time that they had to lift the aircraft off by winch. I think she always flew off.
Right.
And, you know, maybe there was a few minor mods in the purely in the air sense, but it didn't bother us, and, you know, it didn't change the schedule that we'd set. We set out a week schedule, and Shell had come up and said, this is what we want to do this week, and we'd look at it and say, yeah, that looks fine. We send that into the Admiral and say, intend following program for the week, and so on and so on. So and so approved. And we got on with it. We were left alone, but we were fully supported.
Mm-hmm. All right.
You know, I just had a feeling that, you know, hey, this is the end thing as far as the Navy is concerned, and I'm getting all the support I can possibly get from everybody around.
Seeing the Canadians were the first to develop this concept and actually get the equipment fitted and aboard and working, as a CEO, and you have different concerns than what the aviators have to worry about. You're responsible for the entire ship and the crew. What did you feel were some of the important things to come out of the trials when you were CEO of Assiniboine?
Well, I think the first thing was to get the Salvors for the ship side in support of what was going on with the aviation side, because, you know, Shearwater had its life, and Staticona and the seagoing side had their lives, and there's a few had, like I had earlier in my career, had the chance to work in Bonaventure. I was quite happy with the bridge across, but not everybody was. So it was a question of trying to indoctrinate them into that. But that was the way of the future. You know, the aviation and the surface navy was going to work together, and got on with it.
Right. Was there any technical things that came out of the trial that you wanted to have addressed as the CO? I was thinking communication issues, like you would have to know when the aircraft was landed aboard and secured, yeah, and those sorts of things.
We worked at it, and I guess it was a bit of development, like Topsy. You know, we try something and it worked, and we say, okay, let's keep it that way. I can't remember too much formalization, you might say, of the trials. The VX-10 were a good gang, and they believed in getting things done.
Mm-hmm.
And that was sort of suited me. That was the way I liked to do things. So we got on and did as much as we could, in spite of, in some cases, the regulations, and because of another kind. But the main thing was to get the trials done.
Mm-hmm.
And so we did. Maybe my neck was stuck out a few times doing it, but I felt that was my job. I was CEO of the Assiniboine, and we were there to get the trials done.
All these local trials steaming off of Halifax, that was strictly daylight operations. Is that correct?
Day operations, to the best of my recollection. But we had to go looking for rough weather, and we couldn't find it off Halifax, so I went up to St. John's and lay alongside there, and 4-hour notice for steam, forecast for bad weather. We got some grotty weather, but no real, really bad weather.
Mm-hmm.
And we were on 4-hour notice for steam the whole time we were up there, and that's where the forecast came through. There was a storm brewing. We watched it develop, and then when it finally came, we went out and did what we had to do, and then finally got back to Halifax.
For the uninitiated that might be listening to this tape, and perhaps for myself as well, what would you consider to be grotty weather, but not really heavy weather?
Well, the big thing was that the helicopter has a weight on its wheels, and it's all designed for sitting down on firm ground that's level, so that when you start having a landing field tilt, you get some side forces into it. And the aircraft's coming down, the haul down cable is pulling it to the center, and that might be at variance with a gust of wind that comes around the hangar.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a question of saws had to learn to overcome those things. So I couldn't change the ship.
Right.
I was stuck in the water the way I was. So he had to do all the adjusting. The pilot of the aircraft had to do all the adjusting to get the thing down. And saws did it.
Now, one of the questions that I was interested in as a result of going through the paperwork as it relates to the trials was, and understanding that this was just trials, it's not fully operational yet, what would be sort of the normal time for the aircraft to come in and hover, be hooked up, and then hauled down to the deck and then secured, which would be, from the ship's perspective, a particularly vulnerable time if you were in operation?
I can't remember offhand, but I would say 5 to 10 minutes from, you know, him coming in over your stern and saying, okay, I'm ready to come in and land. Because then you have to go get your wind across the deck sorted out. And but I was never in a situation where there were a lot of other ships around. We weren't in formations or anything like that. This was one ship, one aircraft, one job.
Mm-hmm.
So the working it out for formation work. I don't know what happened there, because we didn't do any of that.
Right.
A single ship, single aircraft landing, taking off, and getting her into the hangar, and the ship rolling, and, you know, holding the rotors and stuff like that.
So as from the CEO's perspective, since this was not an operational or wartime scenario here, 5 to 10 minutes during the trials, but that would be when the ship was particularly vulnerable, even more so vulnerable than during a takeoff, which I assume could be done much quicker than the recovery.
The takeoff is, you know, she backed the plane out, she was in the bear trap, and they could back her out, and even if the ship rolled a bit, it didn't really matter that much, because the thing was locked to the ship. I was always very pleased when I got the message that the bear trap had closed, because then I knew that the aircraft was locked to the ship.
Mm-hmm.
Until that time, it was a free weight.
20,000 pounds that could be rolling around.
And if I got the ship got rolling at all, it could be dicey. Mind you, they were pretty stable aircraft. you know, as I recall, I can't recall any skidding of the aircraft on my deck,
mm-hmm.
and she wasn't in the bear trap.
Just stop.